You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs, with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 100 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I have a very special one for you this afternoon. I am delighted to be joined by Olympic gold medalist and world record holder for the 200 meter freestyle, Duncan Armstrong. Duncan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. It's a real pleasure to be here, mate.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I'm very, very excited because, as we said in our little chat we've just had, we get to talk sport, and I don't get to talk sport very often, so I'm really excited. But for those, again, who don't know, only know you for your sporting credentials, may not be aware that you have Hirschsprungs disease. Would you like to talk a little bit about sort of the beginning of that?
Sure. Well, it's almost like the olden days. It's almost like ancient history, going back all the way to 1969. So well before you were born, sunshine. Not much was known about Hirschsprungs disease back in those days, but I got really, really lucky. So basically, my blockage blew my stomach up when I was, you know, about 1 year old, and didn't know really what was going on. And we had a stroke of luck, because once they realized it was Hirschsprungs, I got in contact. My parents got in contact, because I was only one at the time, but my parents, Laurie and Barbara, and I'm number four or five kids, and none of them have had a problem at all. So this was brand new for them. So they went to see a surgeon in Brisbane, quite a famous surgeon. His name was Des McGuckin. And Des McGuckin, funny enough, had just stepped off the plane from Canada. He went to a medical research conference up in Canada. And in that research conference in Canada, they were learning the new technique of a pull-through operation for Hirschsprungs. Des, basically the week before, stepped off a plane, and I was the first kid that he'd see. So I came along and I got the first pull-through in Queensland, not Australia, but in Queensland. And Des did a great job. And after dilation and going back to see him once or twice a year for about 2 or 3 years, I just basically got on with my life. Stroke of luck there, out of the gate. And I really haven't had any other procedures for that. Getting into swimming from an early age and getting into like a high fiber diet and lots of calories. And back in those days, we didn't have a lot of nutrition in the early, late 70s, early 80s. So it was a trial and error thing, that what would affect my stomach and would affect my bowel movements in my early swimming. And then, you know, just slowly learning more and more and more what you can, what you can't, what leads to explosive episodes and what gets you through fairly smoothly in a day. So I didn't really have a community of Hirschsprungs people in Australia. It was just a thing that happened in my family. And I didn't meet another person with Hirschsprungs till I was about 17 years of age. And that was a baby that had been born in our local hospital here in Brisbane, that my mum was in contact with the parents, and I went up to visit them when I was 17 years old, and gave them a great sense of relief that I was in the Australian swimming team. I was winning gold medals in the Commonwealth Games at that stage, and off to the Olympic Games the year after. And so just for those parents not to know what Hirschsprungs was, what the ramifications are, how it manifests later in life, I was able to give them a sense of relief as I walked in the room, and they both burst into tears, and we spent an hour together, and it really calmed them down. And that kind of an episode I've had with my Hirschsprungs about half a dozen times now. Actually, an old teammate of mine in the Australian team, Dominic Sheldrick, lives in Perth on the other side of the country from me. Hadn't heard from him in years and years and years. I was doing a bit of work as an ambassador, a patron for the Bowel Group for Kids down here in Australia, which is a support group that supports families with kids with Hirschsprungs. His kid was born with Hirschsprungs. I think he was his fourth kid out of five as well. And Dominic just basically reached out and sort of said, mate, I can see you're on the website. What is this thing? Can we get some time together? I need some help. I don't know what I'm looking at. And so through a series of phone calls and online meetings, he was able to calm down and really take some action with BGK, the Bowel Group for Kids, and get on with it. So that's been my experience with Hirschsprungs. I've met dozens of kids and dozens of young adults who have had a range of different symptoms and presented in different ways with this thing, whether it be perforated anus or Hirschsprungs. And, you know, I've met so many courageous people who are really tough challenges, much more than I ever witnessed or went through. myself, and they have just keep soldiering on. They're very inspirational, full of courage and bravery. So the work that I do with BGK and the work that I do with people that I meet along the way has been really fulfilling. And it's just my part of the story. And if I can lend a hand, I will, as in going on podcasts with geezers on the other side of the world.
Absolutely. No, I very much appreciate it because, I mean, as we said at the start, you know, it's about, a part of this is about sort of offering hope and offering and saying, you know, look, yes, you're going through, as a lot of parents do at that point, they go through a very tough time. There's a lot of procedures. There's a lot of long, complicated words that people don't quite understand at that point. But if they can see people who have Hirschsprungs, who've achieved great things and still are achieving great things, then I think that can only be a good thing, I guess.
Yeah. Like my third son, Noah, has Hirschsprungs as well. But he had a pull through as well when he was about 4 months old, pretty much the exact same the operation as me. And he's come through it really great. He's 16 now and really hasn't had a problem with his Hirschsprungs all the way along. So it's a bit of a blessing there as well.
That's fantastic because obviously, well, I mean, it's difficult to say how much genetic Hirschsprungs is, but obviously there's a lot of people I speak to who have had it passed through generations from, and usually through males. I think it's about 3 in every 4 cases are male. But that's great to hear he's doing so well. Is he into swimming as well?
No, I think he's too smart for that, Tom. Swimming's a very, you need a special kind of intellect to feel stable. But he's into rock climbing now. So I've got 5 kids all up. Noah is the only one with that had Hirschsprungs, and they've all done a stack of sports and they've all loved it. But I've spoiled them too much and they don't feel they have to apply themselves too heavily. So they enjoy sport, but they're not a maniac like their father.
But sport's the most important thing in life though. So, you know, that's fine.
I agree with this. And the choice of sports for your kids is unbelievable these days. Like the availability of the internet throws up so much coaching and knowledge and gear and, you know, opportunity and access and information and education. It's just crazy how much is on your fingertips to have a go at sport now.
Yeah. But that's great because the more opportunity you have, the sort of more, I guess, more people that get into it, the more the sport grows. And it's one of those sort of, well, chicken and egg things slightly, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. But because, see, sport really helps you access your courage. Courage is the first thing you need to be capable at anything. Courage to have a go, courage to look silly, courage to be cringe, courage to be a failure, and a courage to win. The courage that it takes to play sport sets you up in corporate life, family life, and other things you're going to get into as an adult. You know, like I always laugh about how much courage it takes for a 13-year-old girl to walk out behind the blocks in a swimsuit to have a go in front of their school friends. And yet we look at it like it's everybody does it. So again, sport gives you that incredible ability to do it safely and then, you know, to chase the other traits off that.
Yeah. I absolutely totally agree that it gives you so much more than just the physical side of just the, oh, well, it keeps you fit and this, that, the other, the mental side, the emotional side, the community side as well that sport gives you, especially, I mean, even in singular sports or seemingly singular sports like swimming, you still had a swimming community. You still were part of a team. You still trained as part of a team, and even the sort of player coach relationship as well. So you still had that sort of team environment. So it does. It gives you a lot more than people think.
Yeah, and especially when you're moving community, say you move a different town, different country, different state, your access to that community is through the sporting club. That if you go and join a local sporting club of any of it, it's going to give you instant community because you have a very common thing, which is the love of whatever the sport is, and a willingness to give it a go for the club. So therefore, people can see you pretty quickly who and what you are in a new community through this access point of sport.
Absolutely. And I guess it segues on quite nicely to sport and your sporting life and sporting career. And when you mentioned there, you mentioned moving. You moved to Brisbane to train with a man called Laurie Lawrence, who I was reading about. And I've heard some stories about. He sounds an interesting character.
Oh, he's an icon. He turned 84 yesterday. So it was his birthday yesterday. And Laurie's powered by a different battery. That's all there is to it. And he's just one of those people that his vocation was coaching and unlocking the potential in young people. And he loved it. He just loved it. And he had some of the greatest swimmers this country has ever produced. Won gold medals at Olympics after Olympics after Olympics with people like myself and John Stephen and and other people. So yeah, he's a very charismatic character. He went after child drowning in Australia, which is a really, really big deal. And he reduced the child drownings from to about 30. So all those lives he saved over those years. And yeah, he's just a wild man who just would come up with sayings like, someone's got to win these bloody races. It might as well be us, and things like that. And he just believed that no matter who you are, you could take on the best in the world. If you're willing to do the work, you'll have success. And that's why we moved from Rockhampton to Brisbane when I was about 14 years of age. So my dad was a bank johnny and my mum was a trad mum. So the two brothers and for my swimming at age 14, so no pressure on me from early age. And I'd connected with Laurie, and he had this powerhouse squad, the Lawrence swim team, and the rest is kind of history. I spent 5 years in that squad until I got to my first Olympic Games. I was able to win the 200 freestyle, and I got second in 400, and then got on to 92 4 years later in Barcelona, and then retired after that. So I spent 11 years with Laurie, and I've had 40 years of therapy because of it. It was everything I dreamed of. Having a career like that, like, you know, athletes talk about the sacrifice, and I just hate that word because, you know, you're making some tough choices, but it's all about you, right? It's all about how far you can get, using courage, being brave, investing time, and, you know, putting it all on the line. So the word sacrifice should only be used for our men and women in the military who stand in harm's way for us. You know, sport like you, Tom, has meant so much to me. It's just has occupied such a massive space in my life, and I'm so grateful for it because It's the original reality TV, and it never stops changing.
That's a really good saying. Yeah. I've never heard that before. That's a really good saying.
You think about it, you can have a red hot favorite in a grand final, get beat, you know, red hot favorite at the Olympics, red hot favorite in horse racing and car racing, you name it. You can have this expectation that this result is going to happen. And the reality is it shows up right in front of you, and it's not always right.
And it happens all the time. I mean, you take any Olympic Games where the favorite doesn't always win. I mean, a lot of times the favorite doesn't win, especially in things like horse racing as well. You know, it's incredible. I think that's why we also love it. It's so unpredictable.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we love live sport, because you see it unfold, right? Now, there's a really interesting thing that happens, Tommy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I follow the Brisbane Broncos, and my team just won after 19-year drought the grand final 2 weeks ago here in Australia. And the Brisbane Broncos are my team ever since I came into the competition in 1988. I'm sick for it, right? So how do I think that I've won when I watch my team in the grandstand? Like, how's the transition from this 13 players on the field? They are definitely the ones who actually won this thing, right? but I talk about them like we won. We were great. We're the premiers. And I feel good. I've been feeling good for like the last couple of weeks. Like nothing can touch me. I am feeling amazing. Right.
Yeah.
And I didn't even kick a football or run with the football once. So how do we transition? How does the fan thing work in sport? Because it doesn't really work in movie stars and it doesn't really work in singing stars. And there's a difference, right?
Yeah.
There's a difference to being a fan of a singer or a group or a rock group or a rock star or an actor. Right? There's a difference because in sport, we have this complete ownership of the team that we're a fan of, or Australia or a country or a state, whatever we are, right?
Yeah.
We have this complete transition into ownership. It's fascinating.
I
don't know what. You know what?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I get the feeling when you mention about not winning after 19 years, because I'm a Newcastle United football fan. So we haven't won anything for years. And then we won the Carabao Cup last year. So in my lifetime, that's the only thing we've ever won. So, and that was, I mean, it's about 50 years since we last won anything. So I know what it's like not to win anything for ages. And then that euphoria of, but you're right, it's we won. But like you say, with a singer, if the singer goes to number one, you don't go, well, we went to number one. Well, no, they went to number one.
Yeah, isn't it great? I love Tay Tay or whoever, but it's not the same, mate, because you feel it in your bones as a sports fan.
Yeah.
You feel it all the way deep in your guts and you sit there going, oh, I'm so happy we won.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it's only sport can provide that. I don't think there's anything else in the world.
I haven't experienced it with anything else and I'm old. I've been a fan of a lot of things, Tom, but nothing like this. So yeah, It's fascinating the transition that sport does, and maybe it's because we identify with the players and maybe we might have played that sport as a youngster or an age group or a young bloke. And so therefore we have an idea of what it looks like and what it feels like. And so therefore we can sort of like fantasize that we could do it or things like that. But I can't do what they do on the field. Holy smoke. They are fit and strong and deadly, mate. They are amazing.
Mm, yeah. Especially rugby. I mean, yeah, especially rugby, because the physical power you need in any position. I mean, it's one of those sports really where physical makeup, I guess, determines your position a lot more than any other sport.
No, I think you'll find it in every sport, mate. You're kind of being exceptional about the codes. You know, like there is a certain shape in pole vaulting. Basketball.
Yeah, true.
Gymnastics. Rugby is the sport for misfit toys, I think, because you've got the big props up front, you know, and their whole fitness regime is nothing like the winger. You know what I mean? So you got
That's what I meant. That kind of different positions require different.
Sorry, I misunderstood what you meant.
Different sort of.
I totally agree with you that it's a sport that really dicks body shape across the field depending on your job.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. If we circle back to you and swimming, you mentioned a man's name, John Seaborn.
Yeah.
1984 gold medalist. You got to train with him. How important was he in your development?
Oh, everything. Like, you can't achieve what you don't see on a regular basis. And because Jono did it 4 years before as a 17-year-old, like basically straight out of high school, I was able to really watch him build towards that. And I was able to spend 4 years after that coming into the next Olympic Games, another 4 years into 92. So he was a triple Olympian and one of Australia's greatest ever swimmers. And the way he approached it was a little bit different. I wouldn't say that Jono was a robot or anything like that. He prided himself on sort of understanding who and what he is and training a little bit differently. So again, that's courage again to get off the treadmill of laps and laps and laps and do something that you know works for you. But Jono taught me just so much. You know, we hung out for years and all we did was dine out on swimming. You know, like we were the biggest swimming geeks you've ever seen. And so to see him get that unbelievable success, look at how he handled it between Olympic Games and how he prepared himself for the next one and then the next one. Yeah, it was a real gift. But Laurie Lawrence's team was sort of like prided on that. Like we had, you know, 15 people going to the Commonwealth Games. We had 10 people going to the Olympic Games. We had, you know, we'd win nationals every year in terms of the club point score. The Pan Pacs, the World Championships, the World Cup. You know, the Lawrence swim team was this very, very strong unit that would just roll around. And the expectation was that if you're in this squad and you keep up, you will get a green and gold jersey, green and gold tracksuit, and you will go and compete for your country. And that was the expectation. And we, you know, we had many, many things inside the squad that other squads just didn't do. So it's the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. And Laurie had these really, really high standards that when we wanted a holiday, we just went and trained with another squad because they just didn't have the intensity. So it was like a mental break. You go over and people are mid-pooling and stopping before the flags and breathing on the way in and sort of like carrying on and not leaving on time and not really caring about coming in on time. And, you know, all these small, very small swimming idiosyncrasies that go into the ultimate performance when the ultimate pressure's on, they just didn't do. So we'd go over there and it was just like a holiday. It was awesome. You'd come back all refreshed and smiling and really thinking swimming's a great sport. And Laurie would look at you and go, "You finished with that shit yet? Let's go." Right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So camps were important. Freshening up in other environments were important. And that's the way he kept saying, because Laurie just was always intense. One of the most intense individuals I've ever met. And you had to have a mental break, emotional break away from that at times.
Yeah, it's impossible to keep that up 24/7.
Not for him. He's a nutcase. But for you doing the laps, yeah, you had to have a break.
But I guess, was he somebody who was just so important because he was so intense and so such a driven individual? Was that something that you sort of accredit your success to?
Yeah. Laurie and I formed a really, really strong bond. Okay. And that's where the therapy comes from, because everything Laurie said would push a button for me, you know, so that's problematic, right? So, and Laurie was our psychologist, our masseuse, our coach, our running coach, our gym coach. You know, he'd pick you up and drop you off. You know, he was just never off. He was just always on. And the reason he was that, because swimming comes down to a couple of minutes every 4 years. You know, your window of opportunity for the ultimate prize in swimming is the Olympic gold medal. And the door of opportunity swings open on one day every 4 years. And you've got 2 minutes against the best in the world to actually get it right and get out of it. So all of that pressure would crush a person. You know, if you sat around thinking about that all day, you'd be sitting there going, you'd go nuts and you'd never get there. So Laurie had this fantastic ability to break it all the way down into manageable bits. Now, 2 years out from the Olympic Games when I was 18, I went to Edinburgh for the 86 Com Games, and I was able to win a couple of gold medals there. And And I remember I did my best time by 3 or 4 seconds. You know, life was sweet. I'd gone up there. No one had really known me. You know, had just a fantastic time in Scotland, swam beautifully. And I was just sitting there on the side of the pool feeling really full of myself, feeling like, man, I kind of made it, right? And I had the respect of the team. I was a rookie on that team. It was my first big team. So everyone was slapping me on the back and I really fit in. And my performance had given me access to, you know, these guys that I've called my heroes, right? And Warrie comes along and he goes, geez, that's a good time. We've had a great time here. I said, yeah. And he goes, 2:52. It's a great time. I go, yeah. And he goes, 3:52 for the 400th. Great time. I go, yeah. And he goes, you reckon he'll win the Olympics in 18 months? I said, oh, no. I've got another 4 seconds to get off before I'm competitive. And he goes, righto, we better get started tomorrow then, eh? I'll see you back here at 5. Right. And I was 18 and I was definitely going out that night. So we went across the road to the gold medal pub. And then at 5 o'clock in the morning, I came back and started the journey towards Seoul. And we did 160 laps of the 50 meter competition pool in Edinburgh. And that's where we started. So Laurie was always really good at sort of like harnessing the moment, but landing the contrast or the context of how big the next step is. And about 6 months later, he came along and he showed me the splits. The splits is the first lap, second lap, third lap by itself. So they're all times. And then you have your final time when you touch the touch pads for the finish. And he showed me the splits that I'd need to swim for the 200 freestyle to break the world record. Right. And I can remember my stomach just dropping. I remember just sitting there going, oh my God, that's almost my best time for each lap. I'm never going to get there. And I must have pulled a face because I didn't say anything. And he looked at me and he sort of said, hey mate, let's just get the first lap. Then we'll get the second lap. And then we'll get the third lap and then we'll get you home. Just do the training, rely on the program. It looks scary now, but in time, it'll be just what you do. Right. And I could just remember it just felt like such a mountain to climb, really, really hard. But he just knew how to do it. He knew how to get a young person, get them to show up, get them to have a go and reap the benefits.
Brilliant though. But he also must in that moment, because you wouldn't set someone that challenge if you didn't think they could do it, because he'd just be setting them up to fail.
Yeah. Now, the thing about seeing the potential in young people is you have to see their potential, not sort of like, hey, let's get a result pumped into you. No, let's get you to be the best version of you we possibly can be, whatever that looks like, because the results will take care of themselves. So it's not a time thing, it's an application thing. So if you get a young person to say, hey, listen, I can see it, I don't think you can see it, but let's just start the journey until you wake up to yourself and see your own potential and get on with it. And that's what you're trying to do. You're almost trying to awaken them to the possibility of thinking like this, because you can't actually hand it to them. And shown times is about motivation and inspiration, not destination, right? So you breaststroke, butterfly, young, old. You have to work out, what do you want? Or what are you prepared to do to get to it? And are you willing to start now? Because if you can't apply yourself to the process, the results will exactly take care of themselves again. Because it comes back to this old saying, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're pretty much right.
Yes.
And so it's about unlocking that in a young person to say, what do you think you can do? Because I guarantee we'll be able to do that. But imagine, just use your imagination for a little bit higher than that. Now, what do we need to do to get there? That's it. That's all you've got. That's the only scope you have as a coach, to awaken the drive within and give them a blueprint to follow in the process. And if they can hook onto the process, well, you don't know where they're going to end up.
Imagination is a powerful thing, really powerful thing.
It's the most powerful thing we got.
Yeah. And then if you can harness that in the correct fashion, then yeah.
So what's the tool? What's the tool to harness that? Because like, I agree with you, Tom. Imagination is potent, powerful. You know, it delivers our drive, you know, pleasure and pain. All of these things come out of our imagination, right? So what's the tool that we use to get the imagination moving?
That's a good question. I'm not usually asked questions on the podcast. I don't know what to say.
I'm happy to be unique. I'm happy to be original, my man.
So you are.
If you've got someone in front of your top and you can see their potential.
Yeah.
And you know you've lit their imagination. What's the tool in the process to get them along the track?
The track?
Everybody's got it. Everybody's got this tool.
The application, I guess.
What's the tool? The application tool.
Oh, the tool thing. God, this is tricky at 4:30 in the morning.
I'm with you, mate. I'm with you.
I'll have to pass.
It's a thing called enthusiasm.
Yes.
You've got enthusiasm. I've got enthusiasm. Laurie definitely had enthusiasm. Everybody's got their own blend of enthusiasm. And that's the tool in the process. Because if I can ignite you to enthusiastically and you use your enthusiasm for the imagined idea, whether it be gold medals, podcasts, Hirschsprungs, you name it, right? If I can ignite your enthusiasm, you'll move along the path. You'll move along the process towards the imagined goal.
Yeah.
Now in swimming, I was very lucky to get caught up with a bloke who used his enthusiasm every single day on the most boring sport you can possibly imagine. Now, some people say, oh, you know, sport's so boring. And I said, have you swum up and down a swimming pool? Like once. How many people did you talk to? Now try doing it thousands of times a year. So Laurie really came in with this enthusiasm package. Like I said before at the start, when we were describing him, he runs on a different battery. And he uses that to ignite the imagination of swimmers to do the banal, the boring, and the volume that it takes to get fast enough to compete on the world stage.
You have to. Otherwise, if you just described it as, right, swim up and down, not very enthusiastic.
Your enthusiasm got you out of bed at 4:15 this morning, mate, to be online at 4:30 for a podcast with some bloke on the other side of the world. See, this is enthusiasm. And we need to work out how we do enthusiasm and give ourselves permission to let it loose. Because a lot of the time we reserve it, we cap it, we pull it back. We don't want to look silly. We don't want to cringe and stuff like that. We miss out on experiences because of that.
Yeah.
But if you uncap it and you're enthusiastic about your kids, your wife, your family, you know, the world's a limit. The world is your limit in terms of result.
I think that's brilliant. That is. Yeah. And it's that willing to look, it's willing to fail. Willing to fail over and over to succeed.
Well, we learn more out of our failures than our victories, mate. When we win, we party hardy. But when we lose, we ponder, we get thoughtful. We actually stop and do the thought work to get better. We don't do that when we're winning because the band-aid's over us wanting to improve.
Yeah. It's covered by the fact that you've won, whether you've played badly, whether you've swum well or whatever, you kind of go, well, I've won, so I must have done well, you know, so therefore I'll move on.
And externally, you get this reward from your community. So externally, everyone's slapping you on the back and going, you're the man. But when you lose, that same community goes, what happened? And makes you explain it. So you do this self-reflection when you lose and your community doesn't let you get away with it, right? They either avoid you or say something stupid. But when you win, they're rewarding you. So you're not learning it. But when you lose, they make you learn something. It's good.
It's very true. It's very true. And I know you mentioned about the Commonwealth Games and winning gold at the Commonwealth and in very much in preparation for Seoul in 88. Going into that Olympics, is it right in saying that you weren't in the best of form in terms of race wins? You hadn't won for a couple of years?
Spot on, mate. You've done your research. 4:30. See, you're fine.
I'm wide awake, me. I'm wide awake.
Cortisol levels when that coffee worked well. Yeah, mate, I was ranked 48th in the world because I wasn't a big guy. You're swimming the 200 meters freestyle. And you go back to body shapes in rugby. There's body shapes in swimming for different events. And the 200 meters freestyle is a speed and power event like the 400 meters on the track. And so you need a certain amount of sprint ability, but then this unbelievable hardcore stamina to get home after getting right out there, right, in the first half of the race. And so I was about 6-7 inches shorter at 6'1 than most of the guys in the race. They're all like monsters. And that's the really good shape for 200 meters freestyle. So I spent 2 years from the Commonwealth Games in 86 to 88 just getting bigger and, you know, just eating and eating. And it sent my bowel nuts for those 2 years. But I was able to put on about 20 kilos of muscle or about 15 kilos of muscle. And that gave me just enough power to be able to do what I wanted to do in the 200 meters freestyle. But if I got caught up with how they swim the 200, I would have swum slower because I don't have their body shape. And this is what we call swimming in our lane. You've got to learn who and what you are, what you're good at, and stick with it. Don't get confused about trying to race them on their term. Don't get confused about he's much bigger and stronger and faster than me. You've got to work out, I've got a lane of water. I've got 2.5 meters of water here, which no one's allowed in and I'm not allowed out of. So this is my weapon. So I've got to convince myself, what am I really good at? How am I going to swim this race to get out of the water completely satisfied, faster than I've ever swum before, and having the Olympics that I've dreamt about, right? So that's the mindset. So I didn't really give a shit about winning races for 2 years. And so I went ahead and did that. I didn't win races for 2 years. But what I did was this volume of training that none of the other 7 finalists could do and did. So I spent 2 years kind of like buried in work, knowing that when I peaked out of it when I'm ready to race and sell, my peak was going to be higher than their peak. And that's exactly what happened. And I had to suck it up. Like, no one understood. You know, I had to really understand what I was on about because, man, I'd go to races and just get pumped by these geezers who weren't as good as me. I knew they weren't as good as me. I could beat them all day, every day. And they were giving me a right royal touch up for years, right? And so then I went to Olympic trials and everyone thought I was just, you know, a journeyman at that stage. And I get there and I won both races at trials 3 months out before the Olympics. And it really surprised everyone. It was like, oh, whoa, what have you been doing? And I'm like, thanks for paying attention. But 3 months later, my peak was even higher when I got to the games. And so we were on day one of competition. So I knew I'd be really, really hard to beat. And if anybody beat me, it was going to be a world record. And I would get out of the pool somewhat satisfied because I knew that I was going to get a drop of about 3 seconds over the 4 laps. And that's what I did. The good news is I beat everybody by 0.2 seconds. So I was able to get the world record for myself and win the gold medal. So for me, I was so relieved. I'd spent so long working so hard. I'd invested so much into it, Tom, that if I didn't win, I'd be spewing for the rest of my life. Good news is I won, so I don't have to go down that path.
You got the right outcome.
Get the rounding up.
To put it mildly.
Yeah.
What does that feel like when you're getting ready to start, knowing that the next 2 minutes, just under 2 minutes, 1:47:25 to be exact, is going to be the most important 2 minutes of your life?
Well, it's not the first time you step up in that sort of environment. Nothing's like the Olympic Games in terms of pressure. So everything is by 10. But you've been to Com Games and you've been to World Champs, you've been to national championships and everything. So it's a progression of handling pressure. And all the way along, there's these missteps and failures and things that have really taught you a lesson about routines and what's good for you and how to think and getting your emotions under control. But I would get so tunnel vision at times, it was impossible to talk to me for weeks. You know, like, you know, your girlfriend gets scared, your parents don't understand. Everyone is so relieved when the race is over because you turn into an absolute cockhead, right? So selfish, so absorbed. Everything's about you. And I'll give you an idea of how tunnel vision you get. About 25 minutes before I went down for the 200 meters freestyle in Seoul, you go into a ready room for 40 minutes because of drug reasons, and you got 8 big baboons just sitting in there freaking out because the 4-year clock is about to stop and they're getting crushed by the pressure, right? And we're all sitting together, right? It's just bizarre. So good. I love it. So anyway, 20 minutes before that, I'm getting my last massage and I was the only one swimming kind of that night. So I had the 2 massage therapists, Dorothy and Sue Stanley, massaging me at the same time. You know, it's good to be a swimmer. And I'm just lying there and I'm just so about it, right? I don't know what's going on. And our psychologist walks over. His name was Jeff Bond, and Jeff is a legend of a bloke. You know, nice bloke, took Pat Cash to the Wimbledon total the year before, really famous guy in terms of psychology. But it was the first time he ever went away with us, right? So anyway, I'm lying there and I flip over and Jeff strolls over and he goes, okay, done. It's about 20 minutes before you go to ready room. Why don't we have a chat about what you're going to do next, right? And apparently I just looked up at him. I said, I'll tell you what we'll do, Jeff. How about you fuck off and I'll go down there and I'll win gold medal for Australia. How about that? Right. And off I did, and I did it. Now, 10 years after 1988, we all got together, the team got together for a 10-year reunion. So it was beautiful. Everyone came down, and Sue Stanley and Dorothy, my two massage therapists on that day, come up to me 10 years later and say, "Doug, our favorite memory is you telling Jeff Bond to go himself."
Right.
And I'm like, and I looked at him, I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And they're like, "What do you
don't remember?
Don't remember it. Don't remember a second of it. Not a thing." Right. So then they told me that we fell about laughing and they told me the story.
Right.
So I had to write to Jeff Bond to say, "Hey, mate, it might be a little bit overdue, but I'm sorry about what we talked about on the massage table." And he said, "Don't worry about it, mate. You're pretty focused."
I love that story.
And so that's what these environments bring in terms of focused intensity and things like that. Every sport has their own dictates in terms of how the athletes go about it. But that's the thing I missed the most when I retired. And it took me a while to retire, and it took me time to get over not being a swimmer anymore. Because the moments that you're in that ready room and out on deck is all about potential, right? But it comes with such an intensity that you can never find it again in life. So you have to come to terms with that. And sometimes it takes many years, and sometimes it's very difficult. Everyone's got their own journey. But that's what I miss the most. I miss being in a headlock on deck and not being able to get out of it and then having to do something about it. I miss that uncompromising, "Well, how good are you?" You know, I love that. I love asking those questions, and I love meeting the challenge of that. And that's where the adrenaline hits. The adrenaline hits when you start thinking about meeting that challenge. And at the Olympic Games, the challenge is so big, your adrenaline shot is so big and so deep, it scars you for life. It's awesome. Scars in a good way.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. I mean, that's an intoxicating level of pressure. And for 99% of 99.9% of people, they would absolutely hate that. But
yeah, but it's a journey towards it. It's a journey. So you don't walk out on deck in your first year and go, "Oh, I can cope." You know, from the first beating you get in the underages, 5, 6, 7, 8 by your brothers at a club on a Wednesday night, it starts shaping the way you think about and becoming capable.
Absolutely. And just one final question.
Running out of time, Tom.
No, we're all right.
Out of time.
We're all right. We'll be all right. Just on that particular day on the 19th of September, What is that like getting the gold medal put around your neck and the national anthem playing?
Yeah, that's the most emotional part of the whole journey, because, you know, you've raised the flag for your country. You have raised the flag for your country. You have done something worthy enough to raise your flag and hear the national anthem, and you've done it. And so for me, that's a deeply personal journey that gets me emotional every time I think about it, because I dreamt about it and I always admired people who did it. And then all of a sudden I step up and I join their ranks. And, you know, you can get technical about the swim and you can get relief about the investment. But that moment when you're on the top of the podium and it's the world's best view, you know, you can see for miles, and it all just comes together with all your dreams coming into a reality. And there's a real disconnect between your subconscious and then the conscious, and then it slams together with that national anthem. And, you know, I'm a crazy patriot about everything to do with Australia, and that flag means so much to me. So, you know, I can take a journey back to that pool deck pretty quickly, and that flag down the end of the pool, me staring at it, the national anthem, you know, just echoing through that enormous complex, being in a foreign land, raising the Australian flag. It's all the field of dreams.
Amazing. Absolutely.
It is amazing.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things you can't quite sort of picture how that feels until it actually happens.
Yeah, it's my proudest moment as an Australian, easily.
That's absolutely incredible. And I guess kind of for you now, I mean, obviously you then worked in media for Fox Sports.
Yes.
What are the sort of plans for you at the moment, kind of going forward? I know you're involved in sort of mentorship and a bit of coaching as well. What lays in your future?
Yeah, thanks for asking, mate. I've had several careers, like in television, radio, media, print, a little bit socially, online and stuff like that. And so I've been a broadcaster for many years, and I kind of followed the swim team around and another golden age coming into the Sydney 2000 Olympics and all the way through to London in 2012. But got too old for it, mate. I had to give it away. I was commentating and on very young people, and somebody else should give it a go, that's for sure. So flexed out of that. And now with the Brisbane Olympic Games coming up in 7 years' time, my businesses are kind of all slanted towards the build-up. So I train a lot of athletes into broadcasting. I train a lot of athletes into corporate representation and transitioning out of their careers into corporate life. So I do a lot of teaching and a lot of mentoring around that space. And I think I'll be probably doing that for the next 7 years heading into Brisbane 2032. And just being the superstar that I am, mate. I think I'm going to be very busy for the next 7 years. I'm a crazy Christian, so I do a lot of work with Christian organizations, and, you know, we attend church every Sunday, and kids love youth. So, Jesus is in the middle of the family and everything that we do here. I'm tremendously proud of the 5 kids that I've got. So the grandkids are starting to arrive. We've got another one arriving next week, hopefully, if all goes well. A little grandson, Duncan Jr., DJ. And that's my name, not theirs.
All right. I thought that's what the chops are.
No, I'm terrorizing with the idea that it'll be Duncan Jr. So, yeah, life marches on, and I'm really fascinated to see where it takes me over the next sort of 7 years at least until retirement. I think I'll give it away after 2032 when I'm about 63, 64. I live on the Sunshine Coast. We're on the beach 3 or 4 days a week. It's part of our lifestyle and our culture, so I feel very blessed in terms of the environment that we found ourselves in. I've been with the same girl for 30 years. I'm still feeling her somehow. And she's still hanging around, so please let that continue.
We do it too much wrong then.
Yeah, it's really just family focused and doing quality work with quality people. It sounds a bit pithy, but really they are my priorities, and I'm very blessed to be able to focus on that.
Absolutely. Well, it has been my honor. It has been really, really good to have you on, to chat to you. And I'm so, so glad that we did this. I'm so glad I got to hear firsthand your story. And just thank you so, so much for coming on. This has been a really good episode 100. And I know it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that I wish you the very best with your future endeavors, especially coming up to Brisbane 2032, and we'll keep an eye on how everything goes.
No worries, mate. It's been a pleasure to be on your podcast. I love being a centurion too. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
100th significant milestone. I was the 100th Olympic medal won by Australia in the swimming pool in 1988, and now I'm the 100th guest on Tom's podcast.
Yeah.
All these years later.
We won't say which one is more important.
Well, it's always the latest accolade, right? It's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always the one right now. So this is it.
I'll go with that. I agree.
Yeah, I'll go.
Thank you so, so much for coming on. Take care.
All the very best. Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.